And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Welcome to Social Media White Noise.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about that, Ted, but we've had complaints that the intro's too long. Bugger.
And we're on air.
There we go. See, Minecraft really is nothing like gardening.
Nick, was that some pathetic attempt at... Sorry, I may sound different today, everyone, because I'm on a funny microphone.
Good morning, good day, good grief.
And good whatever time it is that you're listening.
It's episode number 61 of Social Media White Noise with me, Nick Butler, a.k.a. Loudmouth Man.
And me, Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, Dr. spelled out fully.
And a third, not so surprised
guest
introducing...
Sergeant Peter Allen from West Sussex.
Hooray! From West Sussex, the whole of West Sussex.
The whole of West Sussex.
Not the West Sussex Police.
No, Sussex Police, West Sussex Division.
West Sussex Division, and there we go. So the question is whether I'm going to be on my best behaviour. Probably not.
I'm just going to be normal because I'm always very well behaved. It's Nick that's the naughty one.
Hey! I know, you run a company like Reduced Hackers, you're going to be asked questions. But there we go. Peter, thank you for joining us on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
Why are you here?
Talk about putting our guests on the spot.
Absolutely.
No, not at all. I've got to say, actually, the podcast wasn't... I didn't realise we were going to have a podcast, but not that that's a problem in any way, shape or form at all. I mean, what I'm here is, we as the police, we need to communicate with our communities, and we do that and have done that in lots of ways over the years, but, you know, we have just started on that social media journey, and I think we sort of...
And you have a Twitter account at the moment?
I've had one for just over a year and a half, which I started when I was the neighbourhood sergeant at Littlehampton, and it sort of started off with bits of news, people who were arrested, crime patterns, crime prevention, that sort of stuff, but as I've now moved into a divisional role of community engagement sergeant for West Sussex, it's... and also because the world's changing... because the economy's making a change, it's making public services have to think more about what they do and to tailor them more to what communities want. It's about us then having more of a conversation with people. And quite right, you know, we'll have conversations with people in your parish meeting when we turn up, in supermarkets, at youth clubs and all those sorts of places, but there are a lot of people who have conversations online, and we should be part of that. And we are. We've jumped on the bus. The bus is slowly moving forward. It's very supported, very, very high level within the county. We may even get some web-enabled phone. Which is not too technical. If you saw my own phone, it's ancient. It doesn't do anything. But yeah, and it's to sort of learn, you know, not only are you guys experts in this area, you're into it a lot. You're also members of the community. You know, you, Nick, are an elected member of the community.
So I'm a parish councillor. The news in, I failed to get my district seat. I lost by 145 votes. So I didn't get elected to district. Came third, though, out of, you know, the candidates, so it's not a bad showing. Maintained my parish seat with 1,011 votes.
Well done.
Which was a little bit shocking because the last time I got 948 votes, so my sort of vote ranking in the chair went up, so to speak. But yes, I'm a parish councillor, which gives me a certain amount of involvement in community at a parish level. And I mean, I find it an honour that you might consider us to be an expert. I certainly don't consider myself an expert, more as somebody sort of like, you know, an efficient amateur.
It's just being modest.
But using Loudmouth Man, I spotted your Twitter stream, Sergeant Peter Allen, it's two L's, and it'll be included in the show notes here. And I think we initially got sort of talking as I saw that you were tweeting local news. And I just thought this is great because... We're seeing more. There are the official channels, there are the unofficial channels, but having the human, I've always said this, it's having the actual human voice behind any content that's created makes communication better. You know, when you're contacting somebody and it's a person, it's not a machine, you're less stressed about dealing with that communication. And certainly in looking at your Twitter account, you're retweeting and you're putting in a lot of content there that's reports, news and information, but there is certainly still a sort of human conversation going on in the back. Now, is any of this what you planned, or is this simply out of what you've grown from, and are you aware of any other divisions around the country doing this yet?
Certainly to police use of social media, and certainly Twitter. There's loads, actually. West Midlands do loads. North Yorkshire Police do loads. And so do lots of other forces. I mean, the APPO, which is sort of like the senior bosses of policing, the senior...
So there's an acronym there that you're going to have to explain.
Association of Chief Police Officers, APPO. Right. They're the sort of... They're the cabinet of policing. Now, their senior social media bloke was an assistant chief constable in West Midlands, who's now a deputy chief constable in Tayside. And there are lots of other senior officers across the county, and certainly our deputy chief constable, Mr. York, is very, very aware and actively participating in, certainly in Twitter, I don't know about other forms of social media. The reason I started the journey was because I'm not naturally a technical sort of person, is I do think it's really important that we keep the public updated, we keep them on board, we tell them what's going on, because it raises, you know, I know crime's going down.
That's a fantastic, can we just have that repeated? Crime is going down.
I know crime in Sussex is going down.
It's
the
official.
Public don't always believe us, but also... there's that fear of crime. You know, you see the television, you know, and of course television media, you put on all the sexy stuff, you know, Bobby's rolling around in gutters on a Friday, Saturday night.
Well, there is the Charlie Brooker news wipe. I'm getting this probably screen wipe. Little video thing where he talks about the fact that we've become addicted to so much bad news that we've become afraid of everything.
Absolutely.
And would you... I don't want to put words in your mouth here, so let me just put a phrase... Would you feel that the increase in communication that things like Twitter provides makes us feel more secure and more aware that there is actually less danger?
It's certainly got the potential to do so. I mean, I don't know whether you saw one of the tweets I put out last week, and I've got to say I've had no answers. Now, I'll put you both on the spot, actually, then. One of the things I did put out last week is West Sussex has been a division since the 1st of April. How many burglaries of houses in West Sussex, from Selsey up to East Grinstead, Shoreham up to Midhurst, were there in the month of April, per day? Per day, the month of April, how many?
I'm going to go with the brave suggestion of one. Oh, in
between.
Ten? because some people, it's like when you talk to people about how many bobbies there are on the street, hundreds and hundreds. There were three. Now, obviously, three a day is still too many, but I've got to say, my personal view...
Out of a huge number, that's quite a small number.
You know, from East Grinstead down to Selsey and Midhurst all the way down to Southwick and Fishersgate, three every day. And actually, when you drill down into those three every day, there are, sadly, a number where the back door was left open, the purse was left near the back. A number of them were preventable burglaries. And I think it's things like that, and also to talk more about the violent crime, and certainly antisocial behaviour is really going up the agenda, because one of my most used phrases actually is, older people can feel intimidated without young people necessarily being intimidating.
Yeah.
And it is a two-way street, most definitely, and of course you've got the media in the background telling you that every group of young lads is going to mug you.
I just sort of to interrupt you here, I'm aware of something called the 99% campaign,
right,
which is trying to raise awareness that 99.9% of youth in London don't commit crimes. And so I've experienced this, that youths aren't criminals, that there's this ridiculous fear that, oh, it's a group of youths, therefore you have to be scared of them. And it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Now, there is a thing called it's 99%.org.uk, which is a campaign for young people of London-based charity, the Independent Academic Research Study. I'll throw the link in here. But yeah, there is this awareness, yeah. Awareness that you can be intimidated, but it doesn't match the stats.
But it is a two-way thing. You know, older people have got to accept that, you know, they're walking down the street to that 7-Eleven store to get a pint of milk, and there's a group of youngsters sitting on the wall, there's maybe a bit of music, or maybe he's kicking a football against the wall, that they're not going to mug them. But the young people have also got to appreciate that the fact that they're congregating in a place like that, they are a bit noisy because there's a number of them. They, I do think, have got a responsibility to appreciate that older people may feel intimidated by that.
I call this the that's life effect. I attribute an awful lot of bad views in society based on people's initial expectations drilled out of watching too much That's Life, that there are monsters on the streets and there are monsters in society and there are monsters in administration. And so you begin to live in fear and that you need more control and more protection. I, having taken part in the campaign, I've done an awful lot of leaflet dropping. You don't see kids playing on streets at all. In fact, kids don't play out the front anymore. They don't play on the streets kicking a ball about anymore. When I spoke to the mum of my daughter's school friend, and she said, yeah, well, I was going to let my daughter walk home. She is, you know, 8 or 9, but I didn't want to let her walk home on her own. And I think, wow, this is just, you know I was like 8 and walking home on my own. Do you think maybe we've lost a sense of perspective? And because we now don't have kids on the streets at all, the only kids that are left on the streets are the ones we don't trust. The ones we think we don't need to trust.
I mean, I think there probably is something to that, albeit, as I say, you know, the media do think have a lot to answer for. But certainly, we have as a nation, not just in relation to letting your kids play out, but with all manner of other things, become very risk averse.
Mm.
You know, you've got to risk assess absolutely everything, whether it's to do with your kids' school or, you know, certainly something that the police want to do. And I know that, we still have to be wary of risk, but certainly we are trusting staff. And certainly our community resolution has got a big bit of trust and turning away from risk averseness in it. But it is a shame that, I mean, you talk back to when you were 8, you know, that you were walking in there and everywhere. And it's a shame that, we can't, or we don't seem to think we can do that. And we don't seem to think we can unlock our, but leave our back door unlocked. And, you know, it only takes one Sarah Payne, How long before we move on from that? I mean, it's 11 years ago, and a lot of people still talk about it locally.
They do. Well, I mean, I'm not wanting to get into, I'm just going to update this thing here as well, too much about the post-history, because I think there's too much an opportunity to talk about the negative side of that. And there's an awful lot in seeing how the Twitter account that you're running is providing information. In fact, there was a really nice tie-up for me in terms of social media, where a girl had been assaulted by somebody spitting in her hair on a train. There was a CCTV image of the lad who was, you know, suspect in this. And I just looked at this and I thought, that actually looks like somebody I know through Facebook. Actually, it looks like the friend of somebody I know through Facebook. And I've talked about this, sort of how social media, the privacy is not in our ownership, it's in the way in which everybody else affects our own privacy. It's when somebody else paints and tags you. But I've looked at how we're now using things like Facebook for when I see something come up, here's a face of somebody you're looking for, oh, that actually looks like somebody who's in my friend's pictures. So I've then gone through their Facebook profiles and went, is that the chap that I think it is? Because if it is and they've tagged them, suddenly I've got a name. And suddenly, we're only one step away from that CCTV image being brought into Facebook and Facebook running facial recognition to say the user that this most looks like is X.
And certainly, and I mean, that I'm sure that technology exists at a level, certainly you think the security services have got the money and the capability, but to get it down to a level, but certainly, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've just launched through Crime Stoppers our most wanted, and I have I haven't got around to all the other ones yet, but there are some photographs there. They tell you what they've done, and undoubtedly loads of them are wandering around Sussex today. Somebody might just be walking past this window now.
But be caught in somebody's camera, and being caught in the background of somebody's camera, and therefore, you know, posted on TwitPic, posted into, I mean, there is this big concern about CCTV, and I have talked about this in the past, so it's like, I would actually like to have access to CCTV myself. If only because, and I have a fantastic recording where I got stopped because I looked Asian. And they were looking for an Asian chap who was interfering with bank machines. And because CCTV had caught my picture, I just thought, I'd love to know at what moment I stepped out and looked like an Asian guy. Because I'm just so naturally olive-skinned. And I sort of look at these things and suddenly realise, actually, this is now almost the red herring, because now we're all got camera phones and now we're all taking photos of each other. It's not the photos of our friends that we're taking the pictures of, it's the people in the background. that suddenly are coming to the fore. And that information is to a certain extent sort of being published out there all the time, that these people you're looking for may already begin turning up in the backgrounds of pictures.
Oh, undoubtedly. Absolutely, undoubtedly.
Listen, I'm sorry I've been hogging this conversation. I'll let you speak in a minute.
Go ahead.
I've actually got a good question I want to ask Peter. But before we do that, Nick,
yes,
you just mentioned the coffee shop we were at and our sponsor.
Why don't we talk about where we are?
Which are two separate things.
We are in IDEA.
Yes, with a Y. IYDEA. Yes, on Kensington Gardens.
In the
North Lane, singular, of Brighton.
And they would like you to vote for them in the Brighton & Hove Foodie Awards, because they would really love to win. And it's very easy to vote. You just go to brightonfoodawards.com and click vote. You have to sign up with your email address and log in and vote for IDEA in the best cafe category. So we'll bung that link in there as well. Yeah. Go vote for them.
And we're very impressed. What do you think of the coffee, Nick?
I think coffee's fantastic. It's red roast coffee.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a hint of chocolate in there, though. I'm thinking it's probably a hint of there's a slight chicory taste to it.
Yeah.
And irrespective of the fact that they've served it in the perfect mug. It's a mug of coffee. It's how you want it served.
I've had an injunction not to do the large radius of curve.
I've had a super injunction that means you're not allowed to say that. And we have a meta injunction that means we're not allowed to talk about super injunctions, but about the injunctions that we can't discuss. But we would like to thank King of Shaves for sponsoring this show.
We salute you, King of Shaves.
Have you had a King of Shaves experience yet, Andy?
I have had a King of Shaves experience.
It was
very
smooth.
I swore I ran slightly faster after my King of Shaves shave, because my stubble was non-existent.
I've just recently switched, actually, from King of Shaves. And they have two types of gels. They also have the oil, and I wanted to talk about the oil. I'll do that in another show. So I'm using the King of Shaves gel at the moment. I actually use a brush rather than the foam up and in your hands and everything, because I think using an actual shaving brush with a gel, it does that a little bit extra for you in getting your bristles up and getting them off your face in the morning. But I've just recently switched to the Cool Menthol, which is for sensitive skin. And I have to say, you are left with that certain sort of cool, minty freshness on your face in the morning.
Have you had a King of Shaves shave this morning, Nick?
I have had a King
you
of Shaves.
You do look very smooth indeed.
And I want to thank them for buying the coffees and paying for cakes.
I couldn't even strike the most sensitive match on your cheek anymore.
Suffice to say, I can wipe my face with the baby wipes that are left over, and they fall off just delicately. I have sensitive skin. It just needs taken care of.
Yes. You could wipe his face with a peach.
That's about as metrosexual as I'm happy to get. Sure, we'll move on. But King of Shaves, thank you so much.
Yes, we salute you. Thank you very much, King of Shaves. Peter.
Yes.
I've almost forgot my question. I've just remembered it again. Just before the break, first time we've had a break on this show, isn't it? Just before the break, we were talking about people with their mobile phones and things, taking pictures. What's your thought on people reporting other people by taking a picture of them?
No, absolutely. I mean,
hopefully not while driving.
So. Well, no, absolutely. I mean, a big part of our role, obviously, is to investigate crime. You know, we'd rather not investigate, we'd rather we could prevent it. But if we've got to investigate it, we'll take evidence from wherever it comes. And if somebody's going to produce evidence on a floppy disk, a good old VHS tape, or on a phone, then, you know, we'll look at it, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And it forms part of the evidence package, same as everything else does. Mm.
So I have one more question, because obviously we'd like to move on to a couple of other topics that we got in the show. But if there was something this year that you would like to see, not just public, but councils, you know, people involved in community, do to improve communications, because communication is a two-way thing, and I think it has to be more of a broadcast. If there's something that could be done, what would be on your wish list? This can be, you know, the biggest fantasy wish list out there, but what would be on that wish list?
I mean, I think it's probably got to be, we've got to do it together. You know, we've got to do more partnership stuff. We already do a lot of partnership stuff, but because, you know, time's tight, money's tight, a lot of us have got the same agendas, you know, whether it's the county council or the health people. So it's to do it together, to concentrate on the positive, and to send the message that we are actively listening, you know, but to manage expectations. You know, we've got to accept that we can't promise and we can't deliver everything, but it's to actively listen, to do it together, and to manage expectations.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Feel free to join in on the next piece of it we want to talk about, because whilst we're managing expectations, I think it's a great segue into talking about Sony. We talked about Sony being hacked in the last show.
We did.
And I've put a link into this show about a company called LastPass, LastPass provide a service of remembering all your passwords. For you know, we've talked about password management software in the past, and LastPass is one of those companies. Now, they spotted some anomalies in their reporting and logging systems. You know, they, as far as they're concerned, they weren't hacked, they weren't broken into. However, they were concerned through the anomalies that there was a little bit extra activity they wouldn't expect to see. And so they just said to people, look, we think you should be changing master passwords. They did exactly the right thing. As soon as they saw a problem, they communicated. They communicated to match the expectations that they're providing trust, therefore we think you need to do this in order to maintain this trust. At which point everybody jumps on the bandwagon of, oh look, they're hacked, it's terrible, and they're held up for, you know, oh isn't it terrible they got hacked, when actually we should be praising them for they did the right thing.
But did Sony, they get hacked, Nick?
Well no, they didn't. Well, did
they just
saw
they
don't know.
They
saw extra activity and they thought the smartest thing to do right now, because they sensed this would be exactly the same thing, and I'm bringing this into the real world thing now. This would be exactly the same thing as if you're sitting in your living room and you see two guys sitting in a car for the morning who don't appear to be doing anything else but sitting in the car for the morning. You might think, that's suspicious activity. Maybe somebody should go and have a talk to them and find out why they're sitting in the car. And it might turn out they're actually waiting to dig a hole in the road for the council. But the point is that the right thing to happen is people should ask a question. And LastPass asked the question of their users and said, we think you should change your passwords. It would be a good precaution right now. They get a bit lambasted. And this is why we don't deserve good things. Because when people make the right effort and people communicate correctly, they still get held up for doing the wrong things. We're still stuck.
How many other people, Nick, have held them up for doing the right thing, apart from us?
Well, actually, I've linked into this article here, and I've now lost my link into that article, for social media while it was. But I've put it up on the show notes here, because it is a really valid point that you should be able to make something like a report to your users to say, we think we've got a problem. And to a certain extent, they did the right thing. They communicated early, whereas with Sony, the system went down, and then several days later, they said, well, we think we might have been hacked. Then several days later again, they said, actually, you might want to change your credit cards. That should have been the first thing they did. The first thing they should have done was come forward and say, do you know what? Change your passwords and inform your credit card company. We're not sure of what's going on, but we think the best step for you guys is this. It's because you almost are not allowed to take the best course of action if it appears to be negative. So if the best course of action is to do something which might appear to be negative, because of PR, we're like, oh, you shouldn't do that. That'd be a bad thing.
Yeah, that's over on the throwingfire.com blog over there. So we've got a link in the show notes to that.
And I think it's a good follow-up to the story of Sony and their SEO. Not Sony and their SEO, it's Sony Entertainment Online, which is Sony SEO, which also went down a couple of weeks later. And it just seems to me that we're sort of endemic in this attitude that if it's bad news, it's really bad news and we can't talk about it. And actually, sometimes we need to know that the bad news is happening so that we can react to it in a way that's constructive.
Sorry, viewers, I'm nodding. I know nodding doesn't work on the audio podcast, but I was nodding profusely then.
See, if you were a regulated podcaster, there'd be regulation to stop you doing
that. Stop nodding.
You would have to say, yes, I am nodding in agreement, and I'm tweeting in this agreement. That's almost a terrible segue.
Well, I can do it in my silly voice, wouldn't I? I'm now nodding. A bit UK, like a Dr. Pod spelled out fully.
UK journalist tweets article regulated. Article up on paid content.
What's the story here, Nick?
What's the story? So, at the moment, we have journalists, and I think this is to a certain extent coming out of the fact that we're trying to make a clear differentiation between professional opinions and personally held opinions. And when journalists have Twitter accounts, it can often be hard to understand, is this the Twitter account that represents their employer? Or is this Twitter account that represents their personal opinion? In fact, an awful lot of people have tended to sort of put up here, you know, these opinions are my own and not my opinions are my employer's. Because again, we're all in that wonderful, let's take the negative
Twitter
position.
Yeah.
And I sort of read through this and I think we're rapidly misunderstanding that people are not regulated in the same way. There's this cathedral and the bazaar mentality. The internet is the bazaar. Big media and, to a certain extent, councils would like it to be more of a cathedral, a regulated, coordinated, constructed, where things are set to a set routine and sermon, because then everything can be managed and risk can be analysed. People are far more like the market bazaar. They're random, they form connections in different ways, they create conversations in different ways. We don't have, and unfortunately we saw this with the Robin Hood Airport tweets that resulted in the arrest and subsequent trial. You know, we don't have the measure of understanding because we've so built up on let's handle the worst possible case risk. And so this regulation of journalists, the online working group of the Press Complaints Commission has already recommended that a body undertake a remit extension, a mechanism by which self-regulate. I mean, we're going to regulate to the back end of the yin-yang journalists who are already spending an awful lot of time having to assess the news they're allowed to print versus the news that they're told they have to print. And so will we see, I mean, to a certain extent, bloggers are held up as like, oh, we're just the same as journalists, or are we?
I mean, to me, the word regulate and the word Twitter, they're just like oil and water.
Exactly. Oh, that's brilliant. Yes.
What?
You're going to regulate a crowd?
I'm just flabbergasted.
How are you going to regulate a crowd?
You can't. It's a bit like trying to regulate the internet, isn't it? Which we've talked about before.
It's like the AOLification of the internet.
Oh, that's right, yes. Good word. AOLification.
Because AOL was that ultimately well-controlled environment where things would be sanctioned as approved to exist.
Any AOL solicitors listening, these are the views of Nick Butler, not Andy White.
And, the sort of... I still find it amazing when you meet people who are very much long-term AOL users and they're out on the internet and you can just see the sort of... But this is uncontrolled. This is a bit chaotic. I guess it must be like going to Blue Water Shopping, where everything's controlled and organised and managed, etc., etc. And if that was your whole experience, and suddenly you sort of step out and you're into Brighton Lanes, and it's packed and it's busy and it's random, and there are no street signs telling you where this shop is, or that shop might move in a few weeks' time,
or a bit like going to the Maldives, but you're only allowed to view it through a slot of a piece of cardboard.
That's a terrible thought.
Is that a tumbleweed going by, Nick?
That's a terrible thought. Yes, it was indeed. Probably because I have no real experience of going to the Maldives.
Me neither.
But if we have a sponsor listening to this show...
He'd like to send us to the Maldives.
...that thinks that we should be doing this show from the Maldives, then I would encourage you to go to...
I think that's a fantastic idea.
socialmediawhitenoise.com/donate.
All over the world, not just Sussex.
Well, exactly. I think we should have the opportunity of doing this show from Paris.
Yes.
From the Maldives.
Yes.
Hawaii.
Yes.
Berlin.
And Sergeant Peter.
And you know what? I tell you what I'd love to go. I tell you what I'd love to go to is Really Virtual's coffee shop. The chap who is now known as having live tweeted the Osama bin Laden story.
Oh, hit that guy, helicopter guy.
There's a helicopter above me guy. Yeah, yeah. And I'll now be known as the guy who live tweeted it. I think there's a really interesting story here in how things like Twitter. For instance, you're running a stealth operation, you're about to break down the door of the local drug dealer's territory, the drug dealer is on Twitter as well, he's got all of his mates locally, and he just sees a tweet, a lot of police activity on this road, and he thinks, oh, hang on, looks out the window, I'm about to be raided. Because Osama was watching The Big Bang Theory and he wasn't watching Twitter. If he'd been watching Twitter...
So did I just take a joke, a very bad joke there, Nick?
He might have known, you know?
Right, okay. How are we doing for time? Let's have a look. Oh, 29 minutes. We better close up soon, Nick.
Close up soon.
Yes.
Well, this has been a rather long-winded conversation about social media.
Well, I made a mistake. It's only 28 minutes. We've got 2 minutes left, Nick. Sorry, Nick.
Social media and the law. We haven't even talked about how Google Apps for your domain might improve communication.
Shall I get my mate Stoney on? This is an expert, my mate Stoney.
We should do. Peter Allen, Sergeant Peter Allen, thank you very much for your time here.
Yes,
and
you.
For taking part.
Thank you.
Obviously, we put a link to the show notes in here. We've put a link to your show notes on Twitter. Any last words before we head off into the sunset that is the end of this podcast?
Social media will grow across West Sussex. More staff are being trained all the time. We want to have a conversation, but conversations are two-way, so please talk back to us. Tell us what you want to see, what you want to hear, what you want us to do, and we'll try and match that.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your time. He's been Andy White, a.k.a. Dr. Pod, spelled D-O-C-O-T-O-R, Pod.
And he's been... Sorry, I was a bit late with that, Nick. Sorry, I've said who you are now. He's been...
This is so good, isn't it? And I've been Nick Butler, a.k.a. Loudmouth Man at loudmouthman.com. This is Social Media White Noise at socialmediawhitenoise.com. Please visit the website, leave a donation. We love it when you pay for the coffees, and we especially love it when Ant leaves the comments for us as well.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod, and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, Social Media and Technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.